On this episode of DoneWaiting.com's Behind the Cover podcast, Abandoned Jalopy's Brad Smith gives us a track-by-track breakdown of his new release, Death and Joy.
There's no better fans than Blind Melon fans. That's who I want to make the music for. I hope she's not listening to this, but she used to say things like, I'm going to run down this street ripping my hair out. I won't be the same as just shooting straight from the hip and straight from the heart, you know, about what Shannon meant to me, how much I miss him.
Welcome to the Behind the Cover podcast. I'm Chip Midnight from DoneWaiting.com, and I'm really excited to be bringing you the first ever in what we hope becomes an ongoing series of podcasts where we dig deep into new releases by talking to the artists that make these albums. I first met Brad Smith 20 years ago when Blind Melon opened a show for Soundgarden in Columbus, Ohio, nearly a year before their debut album came out, and 2 years before No Rain became a chart-topping single. I was at a musical crossroads at this point in my early 20s, illustrated by the fact that a month before seeing Blind Melon for the first of what would become 13 times, I saw Bret Michaels of Poison play a solo show on a Tuesday night, and Nirvana touring for their just-released Nevermind the following night. The timing was right for me to fall in love with this trippy, hippie, grunge band based out of LA, but with roots in Indiana, Louisiana, and Pennsylvania. Blind Melon singer Shannon Hoon passed away suddenly in 1995, and I lost contact with the guys that I considered part of my family. You'll have to remember, this was the early days of the internet, and you couldn't just hop on a social networking site and trade messages with random rock stars the way you can today. In 1998, Brad and I reconnected, and he told me about a new project he had started with the Blind Melon bandmate Christopher Thorne. They were calling the band Luma, and because I had written about Blind Melon so much in the past, Brad asked if I'd write Luma's bio for their new website. This was, of course, an offer that I wouldn't dream of turning down. Luma eventually changed its name to Unified Theory and released a self-titled album on a Universal Records subsidiary in 2000. Brad had been working on solo material around that time, but temporarily shelved it to dedicate his time to the new band. In 2001, after Unified Theory came to an end, Brad released an album called Mercy under the Abandoned Jalopy name, and while it featured all sorts of guests, it really was a solo album. In 2006, Blind Melon reunited with a new singer, Travis Warren, and in 2008 released For My Friends, which they subsequently toured to promote. Once again, Brad put his solo project on hold, but with Blind Melon slowing down and possibly even being done for a second time, Abandoned Jalopy has resurfaced. On February 14th, Brad will release Death and Joy. Before getting into the track-by-track rundown, I asked Brad to talk about the history of Abandoned Jalopy, from the release of Mercy up through the release of Death and Joy.
Well, the first Abandoned Jalopy record, I mean, that record came... Basically, I started writing that on the heels of Shannon's death. Not exactly on the heels. I was like, I dropped out of society for about a year, you know. And this is back in the day when you had these big clunky-ass fax machines, and I had piles of condolences letters, you know, strewn across the floor next to my fax machine, and I didn't even go in that room. I just would walk by the door, and I saw these pages on the floor, and I was just like, fuck, man, what the fuck am I doing? I was just bummed, you know?
Right.
So basically, I took a year off and didn't even touch an instrument, went fly fishing, I went snowboarding, I learned how to keep bees, I made beer, I did stuff, all this other stuff that I was authentically interested in, but it was more of a form of just escaping from what happened to me, you know?
Right.
But after that was over, I started writing songs and producing bands again, like Love Battery and Mach Tube, and those are a couple of bands from Seattle that I was really proud of working with. And slowly started chipping away at my own songs and going, you know what, I'm going to go back to what I was doing before Shannon came in my life, which is writing and singing the songs myself. You know, a lot of people don't know this, but I sang Soul One, and I sang Tones of Home, and I sang some songs that were written before Shannon entered the band and made them infinitely better, of course. But, you know, it's like I kind of got back to what my impulse is to do, which is just to finish songs and not wait on people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and, you know, right about the time I finished that record, that first record called Mercy, it was when Unified Theory, you know, Christopher found a singer named Chris Shen, and we had this crazy idea to collaborate and do kind of a weird record, a one-off record, and that ended up getting signed, and we ended up touring it, and A Band of Jalopy just got put on the back burner, you know, again. Then after Unified Theory kind of imploded, that's when I put out that record in 2003, the Mercy record. You know, that record was finished for maybe 2 years. You know, so it's kind of interesting that the name of Band of Jalopy is kind of fitting to, you know, how I've been approaching my musical career until now, frankly. You know, it wasn't until recently, a few months ago or a year ago, that I was like, you know what? I love helping other people, and I readily get involved with other people, but what I'm really doing is just ignoring myself. And so A Band of Jalopy, you know, is one of those things that's always been with me, always on the back burner, and I'm just now getting to the point where I have confidence, and I have the age, and I have the battle scars where I feel like I have something to talk about, where I want to lean on myself for a little while, you know?
Right.
I want to lean on my own talents and my voice and my lyrics and my songs and see how far it takes me.
You know, at least to me, the songs seem very autobiographical. So how important is it for you to share yourself with the listeners, or do you do it more as a chance to express yourself to yourself?
You know, I can honestly say this, I do it for myself almost to the detriment of the song. I have Death and Joy, the song Death and Joy, Won't Be the Same, and, you know, and Willing, you know, they're all for me. Mm-hmm. They're songs that I wanted to do, and that they're not pop, and they could probably be better if I made the structure a little bit different, less jammy, but that's just what I want to do. You know, it's my song. I already know that I'm not going for radio. You know, I know that there's not a top 10 smash on my record. There's not any sequencing or keyboards or crap like that on there to compete with what's out there on the radio right now. I'm doing it all for me, you know? Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is about not going for radio, that's exactly what Blind Melon did. We weren't going for radio. No Rain was one of the songs that slipped through. It was like a giant hit.
Yeah.
But, dude, I played that song on Venice Beach for Change for a year before that band, even before Blind Melon got together. So I know what works, and what works the best and makes me sleep at night is just writing from your heart, writing from yourself. I'm making it accessible as enough as I can, but I'm not focused on making it accessible.
Right.
No, I'm pulling from things that I think are cool, like Led Zeppelin and the Beatles and the Flaming Lips and Jane's Addiction and Neil Young and Bob Dylan and people like that. And those are my influences, and that's the way that I try to write music, and that's well enough for me, for sure, you know. So, I think I write for me. I write about somebody, like, man, I hope they hear this song and they can tell how much I love them or how much I miss them or things like that. But that's kind of where it stops, you know.
Yeah. You've obviously got hardcore Blind Melon fans who are anxiously awaiting and going to be all over this record. Outside of that built-in audience, but what kind of music listener are you hoping that Death and Joy appeals to?
You know, when I first made this record, I'm really on this vinyl kick. And I'm like, I'm going to release my record only on vinyl because mm-hmm. those are the people that really care about music. And I kind of stuck to that somewhat. I did design the vinyl album jacket first. I did all the artwork myself and traded a friend. I produced one of his songs, this photographer director guy. Mm-hmm. Who, that's his real career, but he's actually a pretty good musician too. But I produced a few of his songs to take shots for my album cover and things like that. But you know, I forgot what the question was. I went on a tangent.
Oh, about the who kind of the ideal music listener that you'd like to get and drop your record.
Yeah, you know, like where I was going with the whole vinyl thing. It's like I made vinyl first because those are the people that really care about music. And I figured, you know what, if that's only 400 people out there that would like my stuff, that are vinyl listeners and care about music enough to dig deeper than, you know, top 40 radio, then this record's going to be for them.
Right.
You know? And that's what I made it for. I made it for the hardcore Melonheads. In my mind, in my perspective, and there's probably a lot of successful bands that feel the same way about their fans. There's no better fans than Blind Melon fans, especially right now, because if you're still a Shannon Hoon or a Blind Melon fan and you're listening to those old records and that's what you're talking about with your friends, that's a really special thing from my perspective. You know, that's who I want to make the music for. You know, and they like other things. They like Jane's Addiction, and they like might even like Matchbox 20 or the Black Keys or Fleet Foxes or any number of the modern bands that are out there. You know, it's like, but if they're talking about Blind Melon and they love Blind Melon, those are the people that I want to make the music for. You know. That's kind of it. That's the reason to release it. You know, I'm making these records for me, but to release them is to give those fans, some music and in a weird way show my appreciation for them for keeping up with us so long and still listening and keeping like that spirit alive, you know?
While I wouldn't say that I was the sixth member of Blind Melon, it's more like the 25th or 30th member, I've always had a great relationship with the guys, and I've always been honored to be given sneak previews of the material they're working on, whether as a band or the various side projects they're involved with. Brad sent me a copy of Death and Joy in December, and just like the very first four-song demo cassette that Blind Melon publicist Dominique sent me back in 1991, I've been playing it nonstop. Rather than take up time reviewing the album here, I'll just say, while you can take the boy out of Blind Melon, you can't take the Blind Melon out of the boy. Fans of that band are going to love Death and Joy, but I have a feeling it's going to appeal to more than just Melonheads. With that being said, let's get the scoop directly from Brad about each of the album's 11 tracks.
Up Till Now was one of those songs where it's like, you know, I want to go for something that's kind of like Americana, like Tom Petty, but it's still kind of smooth, like Flaming Lips can be, you know?
Yeah.
So Up Till Now started off as just a track of music more than anything that I really wanted to say, and lyrics came a little bit later. That on the heels of Blind Melon breaking up for the second time, and luckily nobody died.
Right.
That song is about reflecting back on the fans of Blind Melon, believe it or not, because, you know, the band, Blind Melon, was the second time around, was really stressed about even just being out there and doing this, you know, and there's some elements of that band that were very, very stressful. Mm-hmm. You know, and I don't want to go into it all because a whole nother book can be written about that. But, you know, it was about walking on stage and barely making the show and the band barely pulling it together to walk out on the stage. And then all of your fears and all of your anxiety and stuff is just wiped away for, you know, an hour and a half.
Right.
You know, that's what Up Till Now is about. I don't know. Some of my stuff is kind of hard to explain because, you know, some of the lyrics that I've written or what the song means to me, like, people don't get it at all.
Yeah.
Black Cloud was written from my point of view that, you know, especially right now at my age and my history and what I've been doing for the past 25 years, I really don't have a choice in the matter.
Yeah.
But the truth is that I never felt like I had a choice. I felt like if I didn't do music or if I did some other job, it would be a giant hole in my system. You know, it'd be a giant hole in my psyche, and like, not even like the what if thing or like, oh, I regret my life now. Not even that. Like, I'm not functioning properly because I'm not doing music.
Oh,
I even take a year off from music, and God bless me, I got to, you know, financially really just drop out of society and just do whatever I wanted to do and do some soul searching and figure out what the fuck happened with the whole Blind Melon ride and Shannon dying and why I died. But Black Cloud is one of those things that I was trying to explain, that I've got no choice in how I behave.
Yeah.
You know, it's a choice that God made. It's like, I can't not do this, even though when it's bad for you, even though it might kill one of your best friends, even though you get shitty with all the people you love, or, you know, even though you realize that when you get deep into the game that it's really all about money and big corporations and selling units and being on the MTV and people capitalizing off your fame, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Even amid all of that, you really don't want to do anything else. You even know that, and you don't want to do anything else. But that's what Black Cloud is about. All the Way was just, it's basically the fastest song I wrote on the record, and maybe the best song, and maybe the most poignant. You know, I don't think it really needs too much explanation, other than that song is about the phrase "all the way" and what it means at different points of your life. All the way when you're a teenager is different than when you're 65 or 70,
yep.
You know. And that's what the song is about. You know, I wrote it about my family and how I feel about certain people. Track 4 is Dragonfly. That's a song I've had laying around for years, and that song is straight up about leaving Mississippi.
Sure, the bucket seats don't slide. So I took a trip from hesitation. My head is full of dragonflies. Full of dragonflies.
It's the feelings that I had in my head and in my heart when I packed up my 1980 Honda Civic wagon with $900 and started driving west. You know, that's the song. Hold Tight's about the idea of committing to somebody. Dudes are scared of that. They're scared of life and commitment. They look at it as like selling out, you know, or settling down, or not cool, or not fun, or they feel like they have more wild oats to sow, or whatever. You know, Hold Tight is about realizing there's something better and deep relationship and committing to somebody. You know, we have Death and Joy. That song's just about family and how the littlest things in your life can end up meaning the most, you know?
Right.
It's actually really hard for me to talk about it because, you know, I grew up in Mississippi with a very, very small family. My dad was out of the house by the time I was 5. I had a single parent mom. And my brother and I, looking back on it, really were trying our damnedest to drive my mom completely insane.
Right.
And we didn't know it at the time. I don't know how she did it. I don't know how she did it. My mom had me when she was 18. So let me think about this. My brother and I were like, you know, we were like 10, you know, and that was 10 and 8. That made make my mom 28. And we drove her crazy, dude.
We had a single mother who had enough sense to make us do the
chore so she could pay the rent. We had to act like men when we were just boys. We had some discipline before we had the toys. Oh, life is a place between death and joy. Life is a place between death and joy.
I hope she's not listening to this, but she used to say things like, I'm going to run down this street ripping my hair out. Like, just be yelling at us, like she just could not get a hold of us or get our attention. I'm going to run down this house screaming and ripping my hair out. We're like, what? Don't do that, Mom. You know, it's like,
yeah.
But, you know, death and joy is about all the periods of life that seem mundane, but they're really, really special. Love has a way, which is kind of an interesting theme because I have love has a way next to death and joy. Roughly about the same thing, you know. It's about how sweet life can be, but it comes with the price, you know. Yourself, you know, to someone, or you fall deeply in love with something or somebody or a situation, you know, the pain of losing it is tremendous, you know, but you can't not want to feel that way unless you're a psychopath. Hey, this song is not for them. Someone Will Leave is that's a hard one to explain. Just it's using, you know, summertime as a metaphor for someone, you know, leaving you and not feeling complete without that warmth and sunshine in your life. That's kind of it. My Only Heaven is actually not on the vinyl. That's like the bonus track you get on the CD.
Okay.
Because it skips from Summer Don't Leave right into It Won't Be the Same. For a couple of different reasons, because when I made the vinyl, I was told, and it was explained to me by the engineers, like the if you keep the record around 18 to 20 minutes per side, mm-hmm. your records sound amazing. If you start getting up into that 23-minute, 25-minute category per side, mm-hmm. you can't cut the tracks as deep, and thus you don't get the same fidelity.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, it's weird. My Only Heaven is one of those songs where it in a weird way, it feels like it shouldn't be on the record,
mm-hmm.
but it comes in and out as being one of my favorite songs for whatever reason. It's like kind of almost country, Tom Petty type of sound and thing. It's kind of weird, and I really like that message. You know, so I really like the message in the, what would it be, the third verse, about feeding from the Bible,
mm-hmm.
trying to keep hope alive. I really like that. I really like that line. You know, I wrote this album for Blind Melon fans and for fans of Shannon Hoon, and it's going to be pretty obvious what that song "I Won't Be the Same"
yep.
is about. You know, I'm almost pretty much saying it. I would say that that song has the least amount of metaphors in it than all my other songs. You know, and it's kind of like just straight talk.
Right.
And I rarely do that, to tell you the truth. You know, because I like metaphors and similes. That's what art and poetry is. It's not just talking and saying exactly what you say, but you're dressing it in a way where it has a deeper meaning to somebody, you know?
Yeah.
Hush my mouth, I didn't mean to let you down. Now you won't be around for me to say. I get to go home in my car, but the radio lost a star. There's a new meaning in the words that you
the same. It's just shooting straight from the hip, straight from the heart, you know, about what Shannon meant to me, how much I miss him. For me, Willing is like a really powerful song. It's about, I initially had written a song for that movie Machine Gun Preacher, and the editor, you know, gave me an opportunity to write some songs and submit for that movie, and the song was actually in the movie for a moment, but it ended up on the whole scene and the whole section of the movie, because it was like a two-hour movie at one point, ended up on the cutting room floor, and that's my music. But I wrote that song for Machine Gun Preacher, and it's probably better that it wasn't in the movie anyway, because the song is like one of those, you know, one of those things where I'm like halfway slamming or exposing, you know, a flawed idea that people have. Even in spite of wanting to do good for the world, they can actually spread evil by accident. You know, this guy's out there rescuing orphans in one hand, but he's got a machine gun in the other and he's blowing people away. Is he doing the right thing? If he is doing the right thing, and everyone is like a resounding yes, like he's doing the right thing, someone needs to rescue those kids, and someone needs to make an orphanage, it's like, well, fuck it, let's just do that in the States then all the time.
Right.
You know, someone's doing the wrong thing, and let's just go out there and blow them away. No due process, just fuck them, you know?
Right.
Willing is one of those things, like, you know, the punchline in the chorus is, if love is not enough, I'll use my gun, you know, and I think people will get it if they hear it.
Yeah.
That's one of those songs, though, you got to hear it in stereo with headphones. Maybe smoke a fat doobie.
With a new Abandoned Jalopy release, the obvious question is, will we have a chance to see Brad out on the road to promote Death and Joy?
Yeah, I fully intend to. In fact, you know, most of my emails today, when I was putting out tech fires with my stupid spin shop store, was to booking agents, and I'm going to be meeting with booking agents and trying to play with the right people.
Right.
You know, ending up for the right people, and play with some bigger acts, and then, you know, and I'd like to play with somebody who's big enough where they only play like three or four shows a week.
Yeah.
But I can slip in one or two of my own AJ shows, like, that are in smaller clubs. And I think the type of club that I should play in initially anyway, or maybe for the career of the band of Jalopy, is like 200 seaters. You know, I want to play smaller clubs. I could never play something as big as Blind Melon played on this last time out in 2008. But, you know, 200 seaters would be enough for me, and I almost know all of my fans by name anyway, so I want them to come out and see me, and it's going to be all basically in the Midwest and short jaunt on the East Coast and the West Coast, but it's going to be mainly like in, you know, Chicago and Cincy and Columbus and Indianapolis and places like that, Detroit. You know, that's where I want to go play.
Do you have a band in mind that guys are going with?
Yeah, they don't know it yet.
Okay.
They're coming with me. Jimmy Paxton is going to play drums. I'm going to get Christopher's on tour with AWOL Nation right now. He's going to be out of the picture for a while because that band is blowing up.
Yes, they are.
They're doing really well. I'm really happy for him. And Aaron, that whole story with Aaron Bruno, the singer of that band, that's a great story, man. That guy has had 3 record deals and just now is getting his due, you know, and he's a real talent. He's awesome. I'm probably going to have Jimmy play drums, a guy named Robert Davis on guitar that plays with a bunch of different people around town, Kevin Hallen, who played on most of the record. I'm going to talk this guy named Frank Devana to play bass guitar, and then I'm just going to sing and play a ukulele and acoustic guitar in spots, you know. But, yeah, fuck it. I want to be the front man.
Yeah.
What?
You should be.
Yeah, you know. So it's weird. I think about this often, you know, because I'm like, I'm older now. I'm like, you know, I'm in my early 40s, you know, and I'm like, I'm just now reached the point with, like, my confidence and conviction where it's like, I don't really care about serving anybody else, you know. It's like, I want to just serve me for a moment and see what happens. So, you know, we'll see what happens. I know that I'm going to get a huge kick out of it and singing and singing in front of people and singing my own songs. And it's just going to be a great, great ride for me. And I'm hoping people are going to connect with it, you know.
Before letting Brad go, I had to ask a few Blind Melon questions. Brad will be the first to admit that he wouldn't be where he is today if it wasn't for the success of Blind Melon. And he owes a lot of that success to the fans who not only supported the band when they had a hit with No Rain, but also to those fans who have discovered Blind Melon since Shannon Hoon passed away.
I'm amazed. I mean, I'm not amazed because I'm obviously a fan and I understand what everybody else gets out of it. But even before Travis came in and you kind of reunited, there was hardcore fan forums of people talking about records that were 15 years old. And it never stopped, which is amazing.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting that, you know, my buddy Matt DeBarge and Meredith Dillon and Sonia and a few other people started Blind Melon Forum, and that ended up ultimately being the hub at one point, where all these Blind Melon fans from across the world congregated online, you know, and it was like this pro boards like chat and thread format, you know.
Yeah.
And it's called the Blind Melon Forum. And on that page, they had all the fan sites of Blind Melon. They can link back and forth to one another. But the Blind Melon Forum was pretty much the hub. And the cool thing about this music, you know, staying alive and kind of in a weird way, the internet kept everyone connected. You know, they had all these feelings in the void of Blind Melon being over, but they didn't have anywhere to go, and the internet was, like, perfect. You know, what are you going to do, mail each other letters around the world and call people from France and talk about Blind Melon? You know, it's like,
right.
So it was cool that, I think it's really interesting that around Shannon's 10th year, death year, mm-hmm. you know, 10th death year, the Blind Melon Forum was stronger than it ever had been.
Yeah.
You know, that it kind of, like, grew. The people kept finding and rediscovering, and the younger people were growing up, and they weren't in their early teens anymore. They were like older and like, oh man, Blind Melon's so good, and like connected with them. You know, for me, it was much bigger bands than Blind Melon, like Led Zeppelin. You know,
right.
It was like that was like a '70s band that I went through high school, and I thought they were it. That was the band. You know. So it was cool to see all these people go into one spot and that community growing of Blind Melon. And it was kind of, you know, interesting that Travis came along and, you know, we asked him if he wanted to reunite the band and get the band back together. And the Blind Melon Forum was going strong, and they really helped get the word out there that Blind Melon was going to go out and play some of those old songs live and try to contribute to a progressive point of view in terms of writing songs, you know?
Yeah. So,
yeah, like, pretty interesting, though. I mean, I remember back in the day, Blind Melon, we would, like, be on, in a van, and we would have, like, a stack of books, and we'd be reading books and smoking dope.
Yep.
And that was it. There was no laptops or chatting or texting people or looking at YouTubes on your iPhone or any of that crap. You know, it's like we read books and we smoked dope, and that was pretty. And jammed basically, you know, crazy records. Like we went on an AC/DC trip, and we went on an Ozzy Osbourne Black Sabbath trip. That's what it was.
Yeah.
We'd open up a Black Sabbath, and in the van, I remember just being stoned to bejesus and listening to Black Sabbath for like, you know, 2 months straight. And reading books. It was crazy.
Right.
It's like, okay, who's sober enough to drive? Who's not spaced out enough that they can drive this van down the road to the next show? You know, that was the entertainment of Blind Melon back in the day. And I don't know. I mean, it makes me wonder sometimes, like, there's, you know, just because of there was much less distractions, all the distractions that you had in that period of time when the music I thought was great in the early 90s, all the distractions were analog. It was like writing or reading or, you know, driving, talking, you know.
Yep.
That was it. You know, you read magazines. Hey, what a weird concept, you know. It's like it makes me wonder if music is not getting as deep into people's souls now, you know.
Yep.
I remember coming home from school and whipping out my Rat double album that I made on a 90-minute cassette tape, and I wore that fucker out, dude. I had Invasion of Your Privacy and Out of the Cellar, you know, on the flip side. And I listened to records back to back, sat down on my guitar and tried to pick out every guitar part of Warren D. Martini. And then I put on a Dylan record from my mom's album collection. And I mean, that was it. You know, I mean, video games was kind of on the scene, but you had to go down to the Junior Food Mart with a pocket full of quarters to play Pac-Man. You know, it's like, it's just completely different now. And I wonder often, like, is music striking people as deep as it used to? Because there's a lot more distractions now.
Had Shannon not passed away, like, where would you have liked to have been at this point? And whether Blind Melon with Shannon was still together, or, like, how do you think it would have played out?
I think it would have played out. We would have, after the second record was would have gone maybe, you know, almost to platinum or something like that, we would have taken a really long break after that, I think. I think we would have taken one of those, you know, 5-year breaks.
Yeah.
And everybody would have done side projects. We wouldn't have said we've broken up. You know, we wouldn't tell anybody that we've broken up, but it would be, the writing would be on the wall. We would have probably made a bunch of solo records. I probably would have made a Banders Loppy record. Chris would have produced some records and maybe made his own record. And Shannon would have definitely done a record on his own and done really weird, crazy Syd Barrett stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Because he was on the verge of doing that anyway with his, like, solo, like, little demo songs that are all over the internet right now.
Yeah.
You know, but I think that we would have gotten back together. I think that we would be, part of a reality television show where someone goes out, like, on, you know, reunite the band, gets the band from Blind Melon back together.
Right.
Or we would have, after Audioslave broke up and Soundgarden went back out, we would have been like this 90s package rock thing and would have, like, just decimated people, you know.
Right.
You know, I think it would have been fun, you know. I think it would have been, it's just too bad. That whole scenario, you know, especially with his daughter, and especially since I'm getting older and realizing that there's, like, a lot more to life than dope smoking in a van.
Yeah.
You know, it makes me more and more sad that Shannon's not growing older with us, and even if the band wasn't together and broken up, I get to kind of see that from afar and do my own thing and, you know, and know that it's always there.
Right.
Because, you know, it's gone forever now.
So that wraps up the first Behind the Cover podcast. I hope you enjoyed hearing Brad discuss Death and Joy. The album is available via the Abandoned Jalopy website, abandonedjalopymusic.com. And I suspect you'll be able to find it at places like CD Baby, Amazon, and iTunes. If you've got any feedback about the podcast, I'd love to hear it. please feel free to leave a comment on donewaiting.com or send me an email at atomicned@gmail.com. This is Chip Midnight. Thanks for listening. Death and joy.